I need a beer.
Jacko pulled off his rubber gloves and dropped them into the bin. He dropped his dark brown overalls into a hamper. Then he took the cardboard tray of jars filled with little red and brown and purple slices of the organs.
Coming?
They walked up the back stairs to the kitchen. It was brown and white, a sober and respectable room that looked to Shadow as if it had last been decorated in 1920. There was a huge Kelvinator rattling to itself by one wall. Jackal opened the Kelvinator's door, put the plastic jars with their slivers of spleen, of kidney, of liver, of heart inside. He took out three brown bottles. Ibis opened a glass-fronted cupboard, removed three tall glasses. Then he gestured for Shadow to sit down at the kitchen table. Ibis poured the beer and passed a glass to Shadow, a glass to Jackal. It was a fine beer, bitter and dark.
Good beer,
said Shadow.
We brew it ourselves. In the old days, the women did the brewing. They were better brewers than we are. But now it is only the three of us here. Me, him, and her.
He gestured toward the small brown cat, fast asleep in a cat basket in the corner of the room.
There were more of us in the beginning. But Set left us to explore, what, 200 years ago? Must be by now. We got a postcard from him from San Francisco in 1905, 1906. Then nothing. Our poor Horace.
He trailed off in a sigh and shook his head.
I still see him on occasion, on my way to a pickup.
He sipped his beer.
I'll work for my keep while I'm here. You tell me what you need doing, and I'll do it.
We'll find work for you.
The small brown cat opened her eyes and stretched to her feet. She padded across the kitchen floor and pushed at Shadow's boot with her head. He put down his left hand and scratched her forehead and the back of her ears and the scruff of her neck. She arched ecstatically, then sprang into his lap, pushed herself up against his chest, and touched her cold nose to his. Then she curled up in his lap and went back to sleep. He put his hand down to stroke her. Her fur was soft, and she was warm and pleasant in his lap. She acted like she was in the safest place in the world, and Shadow felt comforted. The beer left a pleasant buzz in Shadow's head.
Your room is at the top of the stairs, by the bathroom. Your work clothes will be hanging in the closet. You'll see. You'll want to wash up and shave first, I guess.
Shadow did. He showered, standing in the cast-iron tub, and he shaved, very nervously, with a straight razor that Jackal loaned him. It was obscenely sharp and had a mother-of-pearl handle, and Shadow suspected it was usually used to give dead men their final shave. He had never used a straight razor before, but he did not cut himself. He washed off the shaving cream, looked at himself naked in the fly-specked bathroom mirror. He was bruised, fresh bruises on his chest and arms overlaying the fading bruises that Mad Sweeney had left him. He looked at his wet black hair and the dark gray eyes which looked back mistrustfully from the mirror at him, looked at the marks on his coffee-colored skin. And then, as if someone else were holding his hand, he raised the straight razor, placed it blade open against his throat.
Would be a way out,
he thought.
An easy way out. And if there's anyone who'd simply take it in their stride, who'd just clean up the mess and get on with things, it's the two guys sitting downstairs at the kitchen table drinking their beer. No more worries, no more Laura, no more mysteries and conspiracies, no more bad dreams. Just peace and quiet and rest forever. One clean slash ear to ear, that's all it'll take.
He stood there with the razor against his throat. A tiny smudge of blood came from the place where the blade touched the skin. He had not even noticed a cut.
See?
He told himself, and he could almost hear the words being whispered in his ear.
It's painless. Too sharp to hurt. I'll be gone before I know it.
Then the door to the bathroom swung open just a few inches, enough for a little brown cat to put her head around the doorframe and up at him curiously.
Hey,
he said to the cat.
I thought I locked that door.
He closed the cutthroat razor, put it down on the side of the sink, dabbed at his tiny cut with a toilet paper swab. Then he wrapped a towel around his waist and went into the bedroom next door. His bedroom, like the kitchen, seemed to have been decorated sometime in the 1920s. There was a washstand and a pitcher beside the chest of drawers and mirror. The room itself smelled faintly musty, as if it was too infrequently aired, and the sheets of the bed seemed faintly damp when he touched them. Someone had already laid out clothes for him on the bed. A black suit, white shirt, black tie, white undershirt and underpants, black socks. Black shoes sat on the worn Persian carpet beside the bed. He dressed himself. The clothes were of good quality, although none of them were new. He wondered who they had belonged to. Was he wearing a dead man's socks? Would he be stepping into a dead man's shoes? Then he put the clothes on and looked at himself in the mirror. The clothes fit perfectly. It was not even the stretching around the chest or the shortness in the arms he had expected. He adjusted the tie in the mirror, and now it seemed to him that his reflection was smiling at him, sardonically. He scratched the side of his nose, was actually relieved when his reflection did the same. Now it seemed inconceivable to him that he had ever thought of cutting his throat. His reflection continued to smile as he adjusted his tie.
"Hey,"
he said to it.
"You know something that I don't..."
And immediately felt foolish. The door creaked open, and the cat slipped between the doorpost and the door and padded across the room, then up on the windowsill.
"Hey,"
he said to the cat.
"I did shut that door. I know I shut that door."
She looked at him, interested. Her eyes were dark yellow, the color of amber. Then she jumped down from the sill onto the bed, where she wrapped herself into a curl of fur and went back to sleep, a circle of cat upon the old counterpane. Shadow left the bedroom door open, so the cat could leave and the room air a little, and he walked downstairs. The stairs creaked and grumbled as he walked down them, protesting his weight, as if they just wanted to be left in peace.
"Damn, you look good,"
said Jackal. He was waiting at the bottom of the stairs and was now himself dressed in a black suit similar to Shadow's.
"You ever driven a hearse?"
"No."
"First time for everything, then. It's parked out front."
An old woman had died. Her name had been Lila Goodchild. At Mr. Jackal's direction, Shadow carried the folded aluminum gurney up the narrow stairs to her bedroom and unfolded it next to her bed. He took out a translucent blue plastic body bag, laid it next to the dead woman on the bed, and unzipped it open. She wore a pink nightgown and a quilted robe. Shadow lifted her and wrapped her, fragile and almost weightless, in a blanket and placed it onto the bag. He zipped the bag shut and put it on the gurney. While Shadow did this, Jackal talked to a very old man who had, when she was alive, been married to Lila Goodchild. Or rather, Jackal listened while the old man talked. As Shadow had zipped Mrs. Goodchild away, the old man had been explaining how ungrateful his children had been, and grandchildren, too, though that wasn't their fault, that was their parents. The apple didn't fall far from the tree, and he thought he'd raise them better than that. Shadow and Jackal wheeled the loaded gurney to the narrow flight of stairs. The old man followed them, still talking, mostly about money and greed and ingratitude. He wore bedroom slippers. Shadow carried the heavier bottom end of the gurney down the stairs and out onto the street, and then he wheeled it along the icy sidewalk to the hearse. Jackal opened the hearse's rear door. Shadow hesitated, and Jackal said,
"Just push it on in there. The supports will fold up out of the way."
Shadow pushed the gurney, and the supports snapped up, the wheels rotated, and the gurney rolled right onto the floor of the hearse. Jackal showed him how to strap it in securely, and Shadow closed up the hearse while Jackal listened to the old man who had been married to Lila Goodchild, unmindful of the cold, an old man in his slippers and his bathrobe out on the wintry sidewalk telling Jackal how his children were vultures, no better than hovering vultures waiting to take what little he and Lila had scraped together, and how the two of them had fled to St. Louis, to Memphis, to Miami, and how they wound up in Cairo, and how relieved he was that Lila had not died in a nursing home, how scared he was that he would. They walked the old man back into the house, up the stairs to his room. A small TV set droned from one corner of the couple's bedroom. As Shadow passed it, he noticed that the newsreader was grinning and winking at him. When he was sure that no one was looking in his direction, he gave the set the finger.
"They've got no money,"
said Jackal when they were back in the hearse.
"He'll come in to see Ibis tomorrow. He'll choose the cheapest funeral. Her friends will persuade him to do her right. Give her a proper send-off in the front room, I expect. But he'll grumble. Got no money. Nobody around here's got money these days. Anyway, he'll be dead in 6 months. A year at the outside.